everybody, welcome to 185. Bat and Spiders, welcome, Matt, 185. I used to be good at least like 3 to 4 lines in a song. Now I'm good for one, the opening line. And then I panic.
You know, you're no Eminem.
Your lips to God's ears on the 8 Mile Road, Chuck.
Has anyone actually seen that movie, 8 Mile?
No.
Is that a real movie?
I've listened to the soundtrack hundreds of times. I've never seen the movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's people listening that have seen the movie. I am almost positive.
Is there any conceivable way it's better than Cool as Ice?
Well, no. Chuck, the numbers are in. I don't think. After seeing the numbers, Chuck, I don't think the numbers lie. I think if we did an episode on 8 Mile. Yeah. I don't think it would do nearly the numbers.
Might end the show. But, you know,
it might be the worst.
The graph would go in the negative.
Yeah. It might be the worst downloaded episode ever.
Yeah.
And that's...
Our social blade graph will look like one of these plagiarizing YouTubers deep six in their own videos when they get caught, you know?
That's right. Yeah, that's what... I don't know what any of that you said is.
I'm just trying to show off. I'm trying to show off to the younger viewers that I can tell perpetually on YouTube.
Digital blade graphs.
Social blade.
Oh, I mixed up your social blade and my digital foundry joke.
Oh God.
I don't know.
What are we doing here?
I don't know. Well, you know what? It's almost, we're almost to the point where, you know what, we say it's 2024's problem.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. Because I think the energy that I'm certain that's going on, buzzing in my brain, and the energy that's coming off of you, Dale, is the energy of Christmas is next week, and it's a lot going on. We're trying to fit stuff in.
Yeah.
And it just feels like you're running up a hill. That just and the hill keeps growing, never ends.
It's like a hill that keeps growing, you know.
Above the hill, through the clouds above the hill, you see two white, pillowy cheeks come out of the hill. You know, you're running,
yeah,
and you're running and running, and then you see Santa Claus's giant cheeks dropping more fecal matter onto the mound, and it just keeps growing. We know his diet. He's Jeez. Constantly eating sugar.
Just the sour smell alone, the smell of the pungent sourness, you know, one of those kind of evacuations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the higher you get on the hill, the slippery and, you know, more muddy, you know, you start to lose your cha-cha heels in that mud.
Oh man, you lose your cha-cha heels in the pungent mortar,
you know, and you don't want mortar.
The pungent mortar that Christmas is built upon.
The pungent mortar. Oh God. That does remind me of Marv walking up the basement steps that are covered in tar. And first it claims his shoes, and then it claims his socks, and then he steps on that 4-inch nail.
Yeah, man, that's so good.
That's one of the most painful scenes.
Yeah, shots. It is. There's no doubt.
Cinema.
It's
in the history of cinema.
Awful. But it's so funny. God. Are you scared, Marv? Stupid. Did you watch Home Alone this week? Is that why you're so, like, you won't stop talking about it before we started recording?
I forgot to log it. But yeah, we watched it in two chunks because we're busy, busy, busy. We couldn't finish it in one night. So yeah, it delivers. It's a, you know, stone cold classic. I had the VHS as a child and I watched it over and over and over again. Very important movie to me. And it's still, it's fantastic. John Candy's always a delight when he shows up, and you're always wondering, man, did he ad-lib this polka stuff?
Yeah.
Polka, 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 polka. Very big in Sheboygan.
Yeah. I think he worked on the movie for one day, I hear tell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe it.
I bet you that was total improvised by the king of improv.
He probably looked at what's his face wrote. Who wrote that movie?
John Hughes.
Probably looked at Hughes's pages and was like, did one of these.
Yeah, like, it's just,
listeners can't see my face, but.
His eyebrows, Chuck's eyebrows.
Yeah.
Works like of a art.
Self facelift. Yeah. But yeah, I watched that. It is Christmas, so that's appropriate. I did watch it's sort of a run of the mill by the numbers documentary, Rock Doc. I watched Filmage, the story of Descendants/All, which is Descendants were hardcore band in the Southern California scene, late 70s, early 80s. And I always had they're famous for their cartoon, the Milo cartoon. Milo Goes to College is the first album. I always had a passing, I like them. Yeah. But for some reason I started listening to them last week and it just been whole hog going into it. Just cause there are songs like these guys, there are perfect songs that these guys wrote, on a lot of these albums. And I'll get stuck on one song and just listen to it over and over and over again.
Wow.
So it's cool to watch this and learn a little bit more about the background of the band. And it's funny. The funny thing about this doc is there's probably 8 or 10 members of this band throughout its lifetime, but there was no big fight or nobody hated each other. There was no drama really. The biggest drama is Bill, the drummer, who found out he went to the hospital because he had a giant, the biggest blood clot in the world on his lung.
Oh God.
They saved his life. And then they found out he has had a tumor in his frontal lobe that was ruining his life. And he survived both these things and he came out born anew. Cause he was cause this tumor was making him lazy and just dead to the world. He was just dead. And he woke up out of surgery and was oh my God, the veil had been lifted.
Really?
So yeah, there's a beautiful feel good thing. Holy crap. At the end of that.
I know. I just
go through his health stuff.
I just got, butterflies, just listening to to that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's similar to, I watched a clip similar, Chuck, same vibes. But and that's awesome. I'm glad you watched that doc and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I watched not a doc, but a sick, I watched like a sycophant. I watched Ric Flair have a heart attack live on WCW Monday Nitro. And
oh my God, I think I've seen this clip, but
and I'm excited. One, I didn't know it happened. Two,
yeah,
I was legitimately shaken up because this dude could have died on TV. I mean, this is a heart attack we're talking about. And I started flashing, my life started flashing through from front of my eyes. I mean, yeah. I'm in my 40s now. I have low grade hypertension, but I have it.
So does my cat.
Oh no. So. Which one? No,
stop. Come on. Keep going.
Which one?
Come on. No. Oscar. He's fine. Let's, can we just,
it's okay. It's I'll text him later. I'll text your cats later.
You. He'll appreciate that. All right.
But it's just wow. I sent Slim. Slim was there for me. I told him and he was, my head was spinning after that,
But it's a work, right? It's not real.
No, it was real. He had a real heart attack. Yes, he had a real heart attack.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. I thought I thought this was not real. Okay.
And from what Slim tells me is when he's healed and he comes back, they work in that he was poisoned or something. Like that was the cover up, you know, but
oh, that's awesome.
But like he's freaking out on the microphone about Eric Bischoff. He's like freaking out. The most I've ever seen, the angriest I've ever seen Ric Flair, like overdoing his character. And then he's just like, at one point he like puts his hand over his like left shoulder just a little bit. Like you could kind of tell in his eye that, you know, something's about to go down. And then like, it's another couple minutes and he's done talking and then just goes sits in the corner of the ring and he like rolls over. Mean Gene is like, Rick's doing this in the corner and Mean Gene's like, oh, he wore himself out. He's so stressed out. And then he turns around, he starts plugging Starrcade for like a 2 minute plug for Starrcade. And Ric Flair is like having a heart attack in the corner of the ring. And like people start like trickling down and running to the ring. It was intense. Jeez. At any moment, this house of cards, Chuck. Bill from the Descendants.
Yeah. Well, Ric Flair needs to be stopped. Someone needs to strap him down to like a wheelchair and make him stop.
Because his new signing with.
Yeah, I'll say something about that. But to bridge these two, I watched a clip of him on. Okay, what's the pay-per-view where they're fighting over the briefcase hanging above the ring?
Yeah, called? Money in the Bank.
Money in the Bank. And I watched.
I think.
I don't know. Ric Flair must have been in his 50s, early 60s. I don't know. He's a top like a 15-foot ladder with Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy, I don't know what movie does, but he drops him from the top of the ladder.
Oh my God.
To the mat. And they, again, this is why I think the heart attack was because they bring out fake paramedics. I mean, they're probably real paramedics to take Ric Flair out of the ring.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, I think later in the match, he runs back out.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay. Now I need to watch this.
Yeah. I think it might be the very first Money in the Bank.
That's really fun.
But yeah, now the old man is in fucking AEW. And I was like, oh, well, he's not going to get in any trouble. Like he's like gasping for air, just walking, just doing his entrance and walking into the ring. It's like, oh God, guys, what are you doing?
He's all pulled back. Like his face is pulled, you know, his hair's pulled back.
Yeah. That hair. God bless him. But, he's getting into it. I think Big Bill kick Ric Flair in the nuts.
Jesus.
Outside the ring during a match. And he goes down. It's like, Jesus Christ, Ric Flair.
Like, take it easy, dude. Are you out of money? Ric Flair, are you out of money? Do we need to?
He can't be. Well, maybe he could be.
He might be out of money. They all are, aren't they? Like, I hate to say that. That's mean.
I don't know.
Who has money?
More
Slim.
More money, more problems.
Slim, is there any wrestler out there that still has their money? Anybody else want to chime in? I doubt it. Maybe Coco Beware. He walked away with this. He's still, if he's not dead.
Is that the guy with the parrot?
Yeah. If he's dead.
God bless him.
No, he's not dead. So.
Wow.
It's possible he still has.
We should watch those old WWF Saturday morning cartoons that starred Hulk Hogan, Coco Beware.
Dude, Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog.
Jesus. Yeah. But I'm not going to. That was your idea, Chuck. I'm not pressuring. I'm not saying anything.
No pressure. 15 minutes in, Dale, let's get into this movie with two titles, shall we?
Yeah, thanks for keeping us honest and on track, Chuck. This week for the show, Jesus, I didn't even introduce the movie at the beginning of the episode, but last week I chose a Dark Angel / I Come in Peace as the movie this week, and friend of the show, Jesse
Ventura.
If your movie features Dolph Lundgren saying, "Bring the space gun, you have my attention." I wanted to give Agent Smith a wedgie when he dared to criticize Dolph's fashion sense. Agree.
Man.
I
two different sides of the tracks.
Yeah.
Of the track.
Oh, completely. Like Dolph's 8 Mile, you know?
Exactly.
And Brian Ben is Edsel Ford.
Harvard.
Harvard.
Yeah. Yale. Yaley boy. Edsel Ford.
I was like, Detroit, what? Detroit something. Edsel
Ford. You win. No, I shouldn't have. No, you had it. You 8-miled me.
But we watched this and props to Dolph Henley. I mean, if I've been trying to corner my self image and shape it into a way where I could pull off a Henley like that and be happy with myself, especially long sleeves. I can't stand long sleeves on me. So
a Henley?
Henley is just the Dolph's shirt with like two buttons at the top. It was like a long sleeve, just a shirt, Chuck. Sometimes it's like waffled. Sometimes it's waffled like Long John's.
Let me Google this.
Google it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, one of those. Was he wearing one of these? I didn't even notice.
Henley shirt. Yeah, he was. He was for the majority of the movie. He was.
Okay.
Dark Angel. Go.
Dark Angel. 1990, directed by Craig R. Baxley. Jack Kane is our guy. He's doesn't play by the rules. His partner's murdered. He's taken on and off the case of on the tail of the White Boys, the drug kingpins of the city. He gets paired up with a FBI suit, a G-Man, played by Brian Benben, and these two, oil and water, can't be more different. They're just griping, picking at each other. They just can't. They may as well be speaking completely different languages. But soon, you know, they're on the case. They're trying to figure out what happened. And it just seems that there's two alien men. They look basically like men, but they're aliens from another place, and they're. One of them is stealing heroin from whoever he can get it from. The other one's after him. And these four souls converge in a hellfire in the city. This is a Dark Angel tale. I come in peace.
I come in peace.
First off, solid movie. I'll say solid movie. Not in love, but solid. Solid action. The whole I come in peace thing.
Yes,
it felt like there was a. It felt like I walked in to third grade. I don't know. Lunchroom hour, recess period, and. I sit down with the group of boys that I think are my friends, but they're all laughing about something, and no one's letting me in on it. And pretty soon I start to feel like I'm the butt of the joke, even though I probably have nothing to do with it. But that's just where my mind. That's where this "I come in peace" thing. The villain keeps saying this line over and over again. Like I get it, he's an alien, but he's not. Like, is it a meta joke? Like, does he understand that our Earth movies have this line in it and that's why he keeps saying it, even though he's killing everybody? Did he watch television on his flight to Earth?
Right. Did he start it decades ago, hundreds of years ago? Is he the one that came first and said it? So now everybody is aware of like that phrase?
Yeah.
That's what I thought too. Because there's no explanation and he doesn't talk otherwise. And guess what? He doesn't come in peace.
No. But he's gonna. What does Dolph say again? Did he say he's gonna leave in pieces? I mean,
that's the only thing I can think of.
Like they just wanted Dolph to have a retort to the stupid line at some point, and that's why.
I mean, Dolph was probably laying on them to get him some gold. I want this. I want some gold typed up and in my trailer tomorrow morning for when we film.
He needs it because he, you know, much love to Dolph, but he, it's like, you know, it remind Dale, I watched some of these, this is a sad point. After watching Die Hard, I watched some of these trailers of a very late period Bruce Willis movies where he was like, you know, probably being abused by his management, made to be in these movies. Mm. his delivery in these trailers, it's like, it's a little too Dolph Lundgren.
Really?
Where it's like, it's sad because it's like, oh, he has no idea what he's saying. Like, he doesn't know the context. You know, it's like opposite of acting. It's really sad. And that's, you know, Dolph kind of has that a little bit. You know, he's not, you know.
You know, I'm glad where you are with this movie. I'm glad where you stand because I liked it. I really liked it. And, you know, funnily enough, I mean, YouTube's Brian Rummel, after I announced the movie and he listens to the show, he's like, I have this on Blu-ray if you want to borrow it. I was like, Jesus, yes. Like, how convenient is that? But Dolph, like, the more Dolph movies I see, the more speaking roles he has. Like, the deeper I go, the more prolific his speaking is. And brother, maybe there's a reason why, you know, he said two things in Rocky IV. Maybe there's a reason, you know, maybe there's a reason why you could see his ass in the bottom of his ball sack in The Punisher.
God.
Because to take away from.
Yeah.
He wasn't a bad. I think I blame the writing more than anything. Like the I Come in Peace bit.
Yeah.
He was just, they tried to make him like this renegade cop who had an attitude and, but you know, it didn't like coalesce with the story. It didn't, it wasn't enough of a renegade or enough of an attitude in any pointed at any certain person.
Yeah, it felt like he was more, I mean, he had some renegade actions in it, but it felt like more of like him telling the audience he's a renegade cop as opposed to like us really seeing him.
That's perfect. That is great. That is great.
Yeah.
And
the biggest rule he breaks is like not bringing evidence straight to the police station, you know?
Right. Yeah. Otherwise he's still like a cop with he's a cop with an attitude, but he's still a cop. And the same with FBI agent Brian Benben and Dolph's like butting heads. It was like they were trying to prove to us. That's a great way of putting it, because it's like they were trying to prove to us that they had, that Brian Benben had a huge problem with Dolph. But you know, like it was so like dumb nitpicky stuff about.
Yeah.
You know,
I would lay a little bit more fault at Dolph's feet for that, because I felt like Benben did a great job, like
trying,
he owned this character,
yeah,
and yeah, being a baby, whining, like I thought he was funny, like
I thought
some
he was,
of his stuff
he was good, like,
great facial expressions, he was great delivery, good comedic timing, there's a reason he was on that comedy sitcom Dream On, whatever. Yeah, and it was just watching these two. It was a friction in performance that was a little.
It was
tough to watch.
It was probably like, you know, when you go to tee me up, when you say something and you expect me to like, you know, continue it, and I just like fall flat and don't know what I'm doing, and I stop like the joke before it can go. That's probably what Dolph, like Brian Benben's like, you know, like hitting the ball, the volleyball up for Dolph to spike it. Yeah. And Dolph's just like looking the other way. He's not playing volleyball. He's doing something else completely. Yeah. I get that, because I really liked, that's why I blame the writing, because Benben's comedic timing was great. He has a great voice for such a little guy comparatively to everybody else
very
in this
watchable.
Movie. Very watchable.
I love that casting of his. I loved how little he was compared to like Dolph and everyone. It was great. Mm-hmm. Looked great.
He's like a full like 18 inches shorter than Dolph in this movie. But some of the stuff was like, you know, they don't even know each other. Like, what kind of person like criticizes what he's wearing? Or you know, it's like, what do you, like what?
I know if he's like a, like he's a, he's criticizes what Dolph's wearing, but Dolph is like he's a plainclothes detective, right? Like that he's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
The everyman.
Yeah. And he's not dressed far-fetched. He's not like wildly standout-ish or anything like that. It's And it's like little snipes like that. It's like, that's why I think he was trying to prove to us that like, it was like cliched dialogue just to kind of like cause friction between the two.
Yeah.
But he did his best with his, what he had to work with, I guess.
The clothes sniping had the best, like that. I mean, not the worst, like the Dolph's retort that ended that little argument was so dumb. Where like Brian Bendon, he's like, man, you gotta dress for the job. You know, you gotta like, you know, these factors are what, you know, when people look at you, this is like important stuff. And Dolph is like, well, in that case, maybe you should ride in the trunk. And it just lands with a thud. It's just like, what, man. Dolph? Like, I kind of get what you're saying. Like, you're embarrassed to be riding around with him, so he should ride in the trunk, I guess.
You sure you want to go with that particular look? I think you should give it some thought, because external things are very important. They tell people who you are. You know what I mean?
In that case, maybe you should ride in the trunk.
Didn't work.
No.
So, yeah, maybe the writing is to blame for that.
I hope. Maybe Dolph was like, nobody wanted to disagree with Dolph. He's like, watch this, everybody.
Yeah. Maybe he wrote that line.
Maybe you should ride in the trunk. Like some of the, you know, he's like losing control of the English language or the American accent a lot.
That's the other thing
in this movie.
Where's Dolph from? Sweden. That's the other thing is sometimes I wonder if it's his, cause we know from watching the Muppets and the way the Swedish chef talks.
Yeah.
That the Swedes have a different, I don't know the right word, not cadence, but the way, you know, the syllables they accentuate. And you can kind of hear Dolph slipping into this odd accentuating, and it kind of, I think that's not helping, right? I think.
Yeah, agree. It was bad, and that's, yeah, it was just...
But, yeah. But let's, I mean, enough. I'm enough...
Yeah, let's talk about what we liked. I mean, like the alien was a great, the bad guy alien was a great imposing villain.
Yeah.
In this thing. And his and what they did with you know, what I appreciated was even with him, it was like, you know, obviously there's like science fiction influences. It's like, you know, threaded through this movie, but it was still grounded in a whole lot of reality. So it's like kind of like a comic book. I could see myself like reading a comic book like this and be like, it's cool because there's only a little tiny bit of science fiction in it, but it's, you know, enough to like, I really like that in the movie. And even with the alien himself, like he had his weapons, but he wasn't like, you know, flying through the air, or has a spaceship, you know, and I think he's just like a guy murdering people for their pituitary glands, you know?
Yeah, I love it. And yeah, I love how they like, I guess they do explain what he's doing, but for a lot of the movie, we just watch him.
Yeah.
Like I didn't really get what he was doing until they explained it, but he's stealing like raw heroin and then putting it in his wrist arm thing somehow. And then he's attacking people. A little hose comes out, stabs him in the chest, pumps him full of heroin. These people get high, and then another thing comes out, stabs him in the forehead, and then he harvests their endorphins, and that's what he wants. This is all, he doesn't want the heroin.
Yeah.
It's just a means to get these human endorphins, because spoilers, back on his planet, these endorphins are worth a lot of money on the black market.
Just amazing, because
just another dealer, Dolph says.
And his lady friend slash mortal enemy, Diane, the coroner.
Yeah.
She did a great job explaining to him and us that, you know, once the human brain releases endorphins, it's like a higher high. It's 100 times more potent than heroin ever could be. Like once that's like feeling is like swimming in your brain, there's nothing to replicate it. And she makes a point to say like, not on this planet. They haven't been able to extract that on this planet. And then it's like, there you go.
I love the opening. This movie, strong opening. We get that rich guy driving his BMW and see his brand new CD players on the Fritz. And he was he crash into a Christmas tree sale
yeah.
place. And that oh well that's a tip off, Dale. Did you know that you picked a Christmas movie? When you picked this?
No, I didn't. I did not know.
Wow. Okay. There you go.
But it's a Christmas movie.
Here first. It's a Dale, is Dark Angel a Christmas movie?
Chuck, after watching this movie, Dark Angel is a Christmas movie.
Good. but yeah, and then that's the first time we see the alien. He blowing shit up.
Mm-hmm.
We see his disc weapon. This disc weapon. This is important. This is the first clue that the cops hone in on.
This is huge.
It's basically a compact disc that's like magnetic and it just goes around the room slicing throats until it's foiled by any AM radio speaker that's in the vicinity.
I know this aluminum foiled disc, nigh unstoppable.
Unless you have a speaker with you.
I like
it. Yeah, but this is the key. This is like this disc.
Yeah, that's like the, what is it? You're right. It's like the keystone in the arch. Like this makes the movie. This is the whole movie is riding on this disc.
Yeah.
Gun.
I love when Dolph is taken into the bathroom by the FBI guy, like the, not Ben, but his boss. And he's like grilling him about what happened that night. And, Dolph talks about this possible weapon that killed everyone. It doesn't seem like a normal weapon. The guy goes, so you think the key is the weapon? Dolph's like, yeah. It's like, okay. Like that was enough for him to be like, okay, I'm going to pressure your boss to get you put back on the case.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's after he was put on vacation.
The weapon. This is going to crack it.
Yeah. Like that's all it took. He doesn't know anything about how good or bad a cop Dolph is, but he's got a hunch.
I mean, this is Detective 101, right? Like looking for the murder weapon. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God. I love that.
I didn't take any notes. I got three lines and,
neither did I.
And one Christmas movie, two Dolph looks great. Three, promise me. That was like the deepest part of the movie.
Oh yeah. When he finally tells this lady friend, like, hey, we're going to get out of here. Take a vacation. Just you and me.
Yeah.
And he immediately gets caught up in more. That was okay. Yeah. It was the deepest thing, but it was also like so out of character for Dolph.
Oh, like, he was like,
the movie's clearly not over. He didn't solve anything. But when his boss, like who we saw the boss order him to take a vacation before. And he was like, no way, man, you can't take me off of this case.
My partner.
But 45 minutes later, his boss does the same thing. And he's like, yeah, okay.
He's like, let's go. Let's just go somewhere.
Yeah. All right, fine. Let's go.
He was elated about it. He's like,
yeah,
he's like, Diane, quit your single sole source of income. Quit your job.
Yeah.
So we can go on vacation. And she is so horny.
She's the fucking medical examiner for Houston or whatever area she is.
She wants to get away
because she's horny.
Yeah. She wants to get away with him so bad.
Yeah.
And then does she say, do you promise? Or he said, yeah, I don't know what, but anyway, but she busts his balls at the beginning of the movie because he never says he never would say that he promises, right? He can never make a promise.
Yeah, yeah.
But the bounty hunter, good guy, cop, alien is like pleading with Dolph. Promise me. No, you have to promise me. Dolph, promise me.
Yeah.
I promise.
Promise me you'll stop him. Fucking Dolph.
This is the one thing he's going to promise through the whole movie.
One dying alien with a gut full of marshmallow fluff dying in your back seat. And you're putty in his hands.
Yeah.
Poor Diane.
I know. That's, if Diane ever found out about that, after, like, it's like a year into, they're like, they're patching things up after the, after this alien shit show is over. They're like on the mend, they're having fun. And then Brian Benben tells them, like, in conversation, remember when we, when you promised that alien? And Diane will be like, you've never promised me anything. I can't get you to commit to a promise for anything.
You never told me that. You never told me you promised a blood oath to an alien. You never told me that.
No, it wasn't like that. It was some, I'm slipping in the sly already. I can tell. So
I know I tried to do them earlier. It just came out sly. It's stupid. How about when the two boys, when Dolph takes Brian Benben to his apartment for the first time and the sight of Dolph's apartment that looks, you know, it looks like a dive bar with some modern touches, you know, it's got a pool table. It's mostly pool table.
Yeah. And, that's like single man
and a apartment hip kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mini bar place. Dolph offers him some wine. And Brian Benben, he's just like, well, I guess I was wrong about you.
Like maybe Dolph,
I'm maybe we can be friends.
Wine? I said, would you like some wine?
He couldn't believe I was offered wine.
Yeah, he's like, oh, wow, okay.
Wow. A civilized alcoholic beverage.
Yeah.
Oh God. Okay. How about this? How about Dolph's scientist friend, buddy, that he takes him to? That this guy hopped up on caffeine.
Was this just like a character from a holdover from a different movie? And they were let's use the prototype for this guy in. Let's just put him in this Dark Angel movie.
Yeah,
he was.
They needed some comic relief.
He was a friggin' mess.
He was so jittery. It was making me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
As someone who can't handle their caffeine, I was just like, I couldn't handle it. Like watching him.
He was a friggin' trip.
In his mouth. Drink that science lab mud he's making.
And he's like, that one scene where he throws himself on his back and he flips his legs up over his head and touches. What?
It was fantastic performance. Loved it.
Considering, yeah, like this guy he owned the cat. He's like, oh, this is the character I am. Okay, I can do that. I'm gonna fuck you guys all up behind the camera. You watch. Yeah,
I did. I pulled this clip because I loved it. That character saying, "Relax, G-Man," to Brian Benben, but he there's this like jitteriness in his voice, and it cracks me up. Listening to it over and over again. Oh God.
The 10 minute scene where Dolph is fighting off the arrow, the bad guy's arrow. Never once did they come to like finish. I just remembered that Dolph like tries to karate kick him a couple times, but that's it. Like,
yeah,
but this Dolph guy,
gets,
I mean, this alien,
a lot of karate kicks in this.
Yeah, movie, he does. I mean, he was flexing. Is
like before he throws a punch, he'll show you how high he can kick.
Oh yeah, with his jeans and his boots.
His preferred method.
Yeah,
wearing jeans, and this is before they were putting 1% spandex in those jeans. You know.
Yeah, he would rather punch with his feet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's how he throws punches, by doing roundhouse yeah. kicks.
But go on. Yes, the fight with the arrow on a string.
Yeah, this alien man, he is he's like a one trick pony. He's a two trick pony. Like presumably this guy could handle himself, but they kept this camera. The director's like, Dolph, as long as this camera's rolling, you got to pretend like you're fighting off this arrow. You need to.
I was a little worried. I was worried Dolph was going to put his eye out doing that.
Yeah,
doing the acting he was doing.
Yeah, like he was intense at times. He was so intense.
His face, the muscles in his face were just rippling.
So I could see him. You know, you could see him like jerk if he jerked his arms the wrong way and in like a way.
Yeah. You lose yourself in the performance. That thing stabs you.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Entertain the masses. is what he would do.
Yeah. It's for us. He does it.
Yep.
Do you remember the second in command of the white boys, Warren? Remember Dolph confronts him at the first of all, these drug dealers. I mean, this is like the conception of these drug dealers having like a skyscraper building where they run their
street
drug operation out of, like, ridiculous fantasy stuff. Like this is like 1950s, 60s, like mob stuff, like legit, you know, mobs, you know, mafia going legit and having like business fronts. But these guys were just like, it was like they weren't like, they were honest about what they were doing. They were just like having board meetings about selling drugs to kids, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like, there's no front going on.
Yeah. It was a breath of fresh air. They were just like, this building is bought on blood and drugs. And this is where we have our professional meetings. I mean, we're such a big organization now that we have to have meetings.
And, but that guy who played Warren, I looked him up. He's in a lot of stuff, but I think I know him from Perfect Strangers. His face just like, I was like, I know this, the mug on this guy.
Yeah. Is that what his name? I knew this. I knew him too. Where did I know
him
from?
Sam Anderson. It says he's in Forrest Gump. He's in stuff. He's in La Bamba.
Oh yeah. You know what? I look at it. I look at his Letterboxd and I can see him saying, Mr. Bartakamus, Balky Bartakamus. Yes. I could see him saying that.
Yeah. Was he like their boss or something? Like their landlord? I don't know. But that guy's face, I was like tripping seeing that guy's face.
Yeah.
Very distinct.
But, you know, him and his white boy gangsters, they all put their guns out on the you know, like the meeting table in front of them. I felt that was such a hilarious scene.
I will give props to the money spent on firepower and explosions. They did not pull punches. They did some very impressive explosions in this movie.
From what I hear tell is the director is a stuntman by nature.
Oh.
And he came up through the stuntman ranks. And I think that's really influenced the attention to detail in every shot that involved the stunt and firepower.
Wow.
That alien gun that the good guy had.
Oh my God.
That was the coolest gun.
I loved it because like you see it firing. It's just like, oh, it's a regular gun. Like it didn't, but then the explosions that it would create from this handgun.
Oh my God.
Basically a handgun. It was like, holy shit, man. That thing can take buildings out.
Freaking crazy. Had a cool sound too.
I loved when the aliens, we would see them fighting and chasing each other. I want a little bit more of that. And I kind of wish the air quotes good alien, the alien cop was more integrated into the story a little bit.
He was an afterthought at best.
Yeah.
Like they could have brought him in for reshoots or something. He was badly written.
Yeah, like he could have come on as like the third wheel, like between our two cops, you know, like, oh, like at the climax of the movie, they get a third partner and things get even more wicked.
That's a great point. It was poor the way he was portrayed. He didn't have a chance.
No.
Didn't have a friggin' chance, man.
Luggage salesman. That guy. Who was that guy? Remember when the white boys make him do that exchange, the drug exchange for money, the drop off at the luggage?
Oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Al Leong. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He's in Die Hard. That's where I just saw him. They Live, Bill and Ted's. Yeah, he's in everything. That scene cracked me up. Like to have your drug exchange of a suitcase in a place that only sells suitcases. And also like when he fucks over Doc, like he, at first I was like, oh, this is the guy running. Like this is his shop.
Yeah.
And he's just,
that's
what, he's in this bad position of making this But no, he double crosses Dolph and then runs out the back. Like, who did he murder? Like the proprietor just to do this handoff or what?
I still think to this minute that it's his shop and he just left the nobody's minding the store.
It's like, dude, like, what if it goes wrong? I mean, it's going to go wrong. I mean, that guy knows where you work. Like,
I know.
This is a bad idea. You don't double cross someone like at your house.
I know. That's the worst idea.
They can just come find you.
So stupid.
Oh, I love the opening, the heist. I don't know what this heist, but these two like twin white boy guys who were like, these guys were great. They should have had bigger roles. They were fantastic.
I thought the movie was going to be a lot more centered on that aspect.
Yeah.
Because those dudes were they were terrorists.
Yeah, they were scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the beginning of this movie, it's giving big Die Hard vibes. Like having just watched Die Hard, because it has like the Christmas stuff and you have this seemingly terrorist heist of all this drug, mm-hmm. of all this heroin. And where were they stealing this heroin from?
They were stealing it from the police evidence locker.
Wow.
They must have got wind that there was some good uncut S in that locker, and that's why they went.
I mean, yeah.
The police evidence locker hidden directly underneath of that opera house.
A mall?
A mall.
A mall?
Yeah, a mall. Something.
Maybe it was theirs. Maybe the police confiscated it and they're getting it back or something. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. This drug trade is wild. It's just the Wild West.
I'm telling you, man. Anything goes. You just got to be prepared to improvise. Every day at work as in the drug trade is something different. And that's why people probably get into it. You know, it's refreshing.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to be doing day to day. But yeah, I thought that was, the two guys were menacing.
I know. Yeah. I was like, these are great baddies.
And when they walk up to the evidence locker thing at the very end and I don't know what the interaction was, but they talk to the guy behind the cage, the cop behind the cage. And the cop was specially paying attention to the guy's name tag, but that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It didn't mean anything at all to anybody. Like you almost like this guy knows who this cop is and he's not the cop. Like that's not his face or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then they just blew everybody up anyway. So it didn't matter.
I know. Ugh. All right. Dark Angel, I Come in Peace. It's a solid watch. It's if you're in the mood for action.
Yeah. Really
some great clothes.
It's really good quality.
Great lighting. Beautiful looking movie.
Yeah.
Also, they hid the fact that this was Houston until like the third act, I felt like. I mean, I know the description says Houston, but in my head, I was like, oh, we're in New York like the whole time. And it wasn't until the end I saw a cop car that said Houston police on it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah. So.
Great show. Great movie.
Good pick. Yeah. Let's dip into that mailbag.
We have to. We got to dip into this mailbag. We got a cornucopia. Oh, yeah. If you want to get in on the action, send an email to batandspiderpod@gmail.com or call the official Bat and Spider hotline. And if you do that, you're going to notice that I changed the intro from scared little meek little Dale at episode one to confident Dale _A. Welcoming you to the official Bat and Spider hotline for episode 185. Wow. So enjoy that.
Wow.
And that hotline number is 315-544-0966. So we're going to get to the letters first, and then we're going to get to the voicemails. First up is a friend of the show, Chris. Subject of the email, Chuck, just subscribed. So, ooh. You know, big win already for you and
honeymoon phase for Chris.
Yeah. Hey, Chuck and Dale, just subscribe to your Ko-fi page. I was not a subscriber before, but I am now looking forward to exploring the dark corners of the Black Dungeon. Love the Cool as Ice episode. Watch this movie a bunch as a kid. It really is filled with nonsensical mishaps and things that don't make sense right from the jump. Not least the tagline to the movie itself. If you wanted to melt a girl's heart, surely you would add fire, not ice. Also, never understood why Sidney Lassick is apparently expecting the gang to be arriving, even though they just roll up to town without a plan. I definitely had a VHS tape that had the trailer on. The other trailers I remember watching over and over again as a kid on tapes we had were John Waters' Crybaby and the Hulk Hogan vehicle Thunder in Paradise. Oh my God, my heart. Trailers reels are kind of a lost piece of the movie watching experience. Do you guys have any trailers from your childhood years that you remember watching a bunch on the tapes you had? Keep up the great work. And remember, as Ice says, if you ain't true to yourself, then you ain't true to nobody. Word to your mother.
God, that movie.
Yeah. Chris, that's amazing letter. And thanks for watching along with us.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the support.
Thanks for the support, dude.
Yeah. Oh, that Sidney Lassick. Yeah. I kept meaning to say that in the episode where Ice and the crew roll up and it's like this misunderstanding thing where Sidney Lassick is like expecting a guy coming to sell him a motorcycle. Like that's the situation,
yeah.
But it's just out of no, like there's no, it's never followed up on. There's no like explanation. Yeah. Frustrating. But trailers from VH, God, that's a tough one. I mean, it's not a trailer, but is it the Pizza Hut commercial on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tape?
Yeah, that's seriously like,
left, yeah. That song, Left Field or whatever, the kids playing Little League.
You got to know how to catch. You got to know how to throw. That one. That's Pizza Hut.
I'm playing right field or something.
Way
like that.
Up where the dandelions grew.
But yeah, I don't know. These questions, I'm terrible at these questions. Like I have come across the movie or something for it to jog my memory.
I tried to remember some myself and I used to watch Pretty Woman, Wayne's World, and Grease 2 over and over again at my house. But I don't remember that's like I said earlier, me and Ric Flair both dance in the line of death.
It's funny how like, we're nostalgic for that because I remember when DVDs in 97, when DVDs hit the market and they were forcing you to watch the trailers and you couldn't skip.
Yeah.
And I remember how upset I was about this because like on VHS, at least you could fast forward. It wasn't like, oh, I have to watch this trailer again. Like you could fast forward, at least do something.
Mm-hmm.
But just to be hitting that skip button on the remote and it just says, sorry, you have to watch this trailer. Just aggravating.
Over the weekend, YouTube's Brian Rummel came over and we watched 2006's Black Christmas. And
oh, wow. I saw that in the theater.
He had it on DVD.
Yeah.
And that sucker had like 6 movie trailers in front of it. That is probably the last DVD that was pressed that had any movie trailers on it. But to be,
yeah, they don't do it anymore, do they?
Yeah, they don't. And it's like to be able to get to watch like 6 of them in a row was a real treat.
Wow. Yeah. Did you have to watch them? Were they skippable?
I didn't check because I was like, I'm watching these. And that's exactly what I did.
Into it.
Chris getting to see the Thunder in Paradise trailer. Love that. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
And thanks for your support. We are trying to get through this segment right now because we're recording another Black Dungeon episode right after this.
Under the gun.
Okay, we're going to get to these voicemails, which will, Chuck.
Ho, ho, ho! Tubi Christmas!
Wow.
Wow.
Merry Tubi Christmas!
Wow, Merry Tubi Christmas. I think that was Santa Claus. I don't think that was the Tubi werewolf. That was Santa Claus.
I think that was Santa Claus. Yeah. Maybe.
Jeez.
I think it's always been Tubi Santa Claus. That's him. This is him.
Wow.
Tubi Santa Claus.
Wow.
And Dark Angel was in fact on Tubi.
It was.
Next up.
Hey, Chuck and Dale. This is your friend Brian Rummel over at YouTube. And I just want to call in and wish you guys a very Merry Christmas and another great year of Bat and Spider content. And I'm looking forward to your 2024 shows. And, I just had a brain fart, so we all laugh at that one. But, yeah, I just want to wish you guys a very Merry Christmas. You guys had a great year. I'm enjoying listening every show. And see you in the new year. Bye.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for always being a nice presence on the Discord and listening every week and being a good neighbor to Dale.
Yeah.
My co-host. Oh, speaking, and he lent you the Dark Angel disc. Was there anything interesting on there?
Yeah, there was like a 17 minute or 27 minute like return to Dark Angel. It was like a, a look back on Dark Angel, but I did not watch that yet, but I'm going to.
Interesting.
I'm not.
Is it Shout Factory?
Shout Factory, yeah. They do good work over there. Good eggs.
They do. They, you know, they'll do a documentary, you know?
Yeah, they will.
They just won't give you nothing. They'll give you something.
Something for nothing when you call Domino's. Number three.
Wow. Three voicemails.
Three voicemails. We got a fourth too. Spoilers.
Hi, Bat and Spider.
Hi.
We're exploring Haddonfield, not the one with Michael Myers, though, right?
Whoa.
I want pizza.
Yeah. Do you guys have pizza? You can yell. Do they have pizza?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, pizza.
What do you want to order? Yeah, I'll take a calzone with nothing.
Jesus.
Yeah. Nothing? Calzone, yeah.
With nothing.
We're going to do that.
Popcorn, too. We can get some popcorn.
Yeah, let's get some popcorn. All right. Love you guys. Bye.
He's as drunk. Wow.
Wow. We just got called from a bar, Dale.
We got drunk dialed.
Yeah.
And then they ordered their calzones. They ordered their calzones live on our voicemail.
Yeah. Is that what was happening?
I think so.
I thought they were joking with us that they were trying to order pizza from us.
I don't know. I think as soon as that's Run Mike D of the Will Run For podcast and the Skyrim Addict podcast, clearly not running at that moment. Okay.
Yeah. And Aaron, co-host.
I think they were going to call and actually do say something to us, but they were at a distillery guaranteed. And then somebody walked up and asked what they wanted.
It felt more like they were bullying us a little bit, maybe a little showing off, like that they're out having fun, you know?
Wow, I didn't think of it like that, but that could be it too. Like them just dragging their B's and D's across our faces.
But shout out to them. I think they were one of our very first voicemails, I think. I feel like they called very early on or something.
Really?
When the show started. Yeah, I have a memory of them.
That's very possible.
Writing in or calling in.
Skyrim Addict. I met Mike through the Skyrim Addict podcast, and you know, one of my favorites still. Guy listened to his podcast and listened to Will Run For a tape.
Does he still do that show?
He does, yeah.
Hey guys, this is Jesse and Shoreline calling in. Despite the admonishment on Instagram to no longer call in, I just had to get in touch with you about Dark Angel, also known as I Come in Peace. This movie has lived rent-free in my brain for almost 30 years, I think.
Yeah.
Dating back to when the New York area's WPIX ran promos for it, under the title I Come in Peace. And, I was about 9 years old when these were running, and I just remember seeing that trailer, and hearing Dolph Lundgren tell the alien, "You go in pieces." And I think about that all the time. And so, having an excuse to go and see this movie was lots of fun. And I think too about the censored version that must have run on WPIX, and what the thinking club that Dolph goes to show Agent Smith the place where he goes to have ladies help him think must have looked like.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a great time. I also had to change the letterbox poster to something that said I Come in Peace rather than Dark Angel, because that's the real title of this movie.
Right.
And I love the tagline on that poster on Letterboxd for I Come in Peace. It says, "Good cop, bad alien, big trouble." So much fun. And one last question. Do you guys think that the alien actor had some lifts on his shoes? In the fight scene at the end, it looked like they had were adding a couple of inches to that guy. He was big, but they had to make him look a little bit bigger than Dolph, and the soles on those shoes looked pretty thick. So thanks you guys so much. Goodbye. Peace and love.
Peace and love, Jesse. Thank you for that voicemail. Wow.
What a voicemail. Jesse, thanks.
Jesse intimately remembers I Come in Peace trailers on WPIX. Yeah. That is an amazing core memory.
Yeah, this is why we do it.
Yes.
To bring this out of people, right?
And I think that guy had, wow. That guy definitely had lifts.
Oh yeah, come on. You cast Dolph Lundgren, you're gonna be, Houston's gonna be running out of apple crates for that set. They're gonna be, they gotta line every street in Houston with apple crates.
Right. Just so that guy could walk next to him.
Yeah.
And be imposing.
Especially Ben too. Yeah.
Little Ben.
How about the good cop alien? How about his look? He had this great mullet with this like short bang things.
Yeah.
And it almost looked like they made his head bigger, but I think that was just his head. It looked like he had prosthetic widening.
I thought that he had a prosthetic head too. And like really that, they maybe did that and then they stopped. They're just like, okay.
Yeah.
It's fine.
This maybe, is enough.
They're probably like, you know what? We could have got away with not doing that to your head but it's too late. You're going to have to film that on your head.
Yeah. We do have this whole scene where your blood looks like marshmallow fluff. So right. That's probably enough. We didn't need to do that.
But you could still look like, you know, you. So, you know, sorry. Sorry about that. Jesse, thanks for that voicemail. And that's the end of the segment. So, Chuck, now it's your turn. Have you a web page with a list of movies open?
Yes, I was doing something that's very tough for me. And I was doing two things at once, listening to you and the voicemails and picking a movie. So, announcement. We're going to take the week off because it's a holiday.
Yes.
We'll be putting up something from the archives next week. So enjoy that. But for the week after, we will be watching from 1976, Crypt of Dark Secrets.
Crypt of Dark Secrets. Hello. This, oh my God. Cover this.
I think this is going to be some very low budget garbage from the 70s.
It penetrates beyond the darkness of sexual possession. A witch resurrects a murdered Vietnam vet and takes revenge on his killers. Oh my God. Did you know that?
This is for you. This is for you, Dale.
Just hook the jumper cables right up to me, up to my front.
I saw that description. I was like, this is it. This one's for my friend, Dale.
Wow. Crypt of Dark Secrets on Tubi.
Yeah, on to, of course.
Fantastic. Anybody we know, Jack Weiss. Oh, he's directed five movies that I'm adding to my watch list.
Yeah, his most well-known is Mardi Gras Massacre, which I almost picked, but there's something about Crypt of Dark Secrets that I needed to see.
I'm 100% positive I was... Mardi Gras Massacre, I was reading about just a couple days ago. That's funny.
Oh, really?
Jesus.
It seems like it's somewhat notorious.
Okay. Wow. Jack Weiss, I will be back to visit you later.
We're not done with you, Jack.
Everybody, go to batandspider.com. Go to ko-fi.com/batandspider. That's our Ko-fi page. You throw us any bit of support and you are in the Black Dungeon, baby. You get a special role in our Discord. You get access to special channels in Discord. And obviously you get access to hours and hours of content exclusive to Ko-fi subscribers. And we thank our subscribers wholeheartedly.
Yeah, the special Discord roles give you your name in black. Which makes it virtually impossible for me to see your name because I use dark mode on the app on my phone. Mm-hmm. I oftentimes have no idea.
You're welcome.
I have to kind of figure out.
Chuck, you're welcome.
Who might be saying this? But I would never, that's got to be the color. That's our color. It's got to be.
I guess,
the color.
Yeah.
There's no way. I'm not changing that.
There's no happy medium.
No. I mean, I could pay extra to Discord to have more themes. But I'm not going to do that. Are you kidding me?
Oh, God. Everybody wants their hands in your pockets anymore.
Nickel and diming. Yeah.
You know? But But do that and listen to the other tape deck shows like the aforementioned Will Run For. And I, you know, it's creeping up on me now, Chuck, but this is the last episode of the year and I hadn't planned for anything like that, but what a great year.
I know. Yeah. This really crept up on us.
Yeah.
We'll see. We won't talk to these guys till 2024.
So everybody that's ever downloaded or listened to a show, supported us on Ko-fi, told their friends about it, left us a review, joined our Discord and said something to us, humored us in any way, we are very appreciative. And 2023 was fantastic for Bat and Spider. And it's all thanks to everybody. So we'll see you first week in January.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe this could be it, man. Just like this last bit of coffee in my cup right now.
Yeah.
Just going to go down and go away and just be part of me.
Just feeling that wind in your hair.
Yep. Just feel it. Sorry, pal. Bar's closed. Love you all.
Love ya. Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.